Hey, I'm Lisa Whittle, and welcome to the Jesus Over Everything Show, affectionately known as Joe, where around here you will always hear honest conversations about life, faith, and true strength, courage, and love in the midst of our real everyday life. Doing something fun and exciting for the summer, airing the best of the best Joe from the past two seasons. That's right, we are bringing you the top 20 most listened to Joe shows of the past year, shows with some of my most amazing guests, therapists, Bible teachers, some of my close friends, talking about sex and spiritual abuse and how to have hard conversations and showing up when it's hard. Get ready, buckle up. Best of the best, top 20 Joe shows are here. Hey, thanks for showing up. I'm Lisa Whittle, and welcome to the Jesus Over Everything Show, affectionately known as Joe, where this season is all about truth-telling, finding the good, and showing up for our lives today, no matter what has happened even yesterday. Licensed professional counselor, speaker, and broadcaster Jim Kress is on the show today, and we have an incredible conversation you won't want to miss. Why counseling gets a bad rap, what we need more of right now, either hope or peace, and he takes us through quick counsel of all the topics I cover in The Hard Good. Trust me, this is so very worth your time because the counseling nuggets Jim brings are ones you're going to hold on to for a really long time. I speak from personal experience. So you and I are friends. We are already friends. And I know that you're a by the book guy, so you wouldn't say this, but I can say it. And I just want to say it. You're my counselor. I mean, so here's the thing. I don't even know. Again, you won't comment, but I will.
You're allowed to comment for me. Whatever you say, I might.
You're gonna agree.
My throat or yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm sure when I came in for the first time, I was like, now here's my deal with counseling, or here's my beef with going to a counselor or whatever. Because look, I have trust issues. I mean, it, welcome to all of us, right?
Yeah, that's
but
right.
I haven't gone to counseling much in the recent years. I firmly believe in it. Clearly, I believe it is super important. I so believe in it. It's just personally hard for me to do, which I think a lot of folks would fall in that category. And I have my own reasons for that. But here is breaking news that people might not know. When I talk in my book about meeting with a counselor and there's an interaction that we have, it's actually you, Jim Kress.
You never told me that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I talk about you in the book, and it was one time where.
Is this in Joe?
Yeah, it's in Joe.
Yeah. Okay.
I talk about you. I probably should have given you the heads up, by the way. But yeah. I say that I met with a counselor. You're probably in a lot of books, by the way. I say that I met with a counselor, and we talked about the fact that I'm unimpressible. And you wanted to dig into that a little bit, and the fact that it's because I feel tricked. So anyway, we don't want to dive into all of my issues, but I just say that because I want people to have a little backstory. Why do you think counseling gets a bad rap so often, especially by Christians?
Well, I think sometimes, at least it deserves a bad rap, or it's earned that reputation. Hmm. I find that it's either too shallow, you know, post-it note, take a Bible verse and call me in the morning, or it's, you know, just it moves to coaching too quick or advice too quick without even hearing a person's story, and not just hearing it, but walking in the facts and the impact of a person's story. Or it's sometimes assuming things too quickly, like too Freudian or too kind of counsel-ease, or you jump right in and it's I'm going to use a word here, sorry, but it's like it's weird. It's like, can we just have a meaningful, what I call a conversation that matters? Can we just have a real conversation? I understand the money's being transacted. You're paying for it, but people pay tithes to the church and paid pastors for years and nobody complains. So it's transactional at that level, but it's like, because sometimes it's like, can we just be normal? I hear from other clients, there's like some weird counseling that's out there. And I think part of it is too, or some of the Christian counseling has been at times too shallow. And it's like, let's go a little deeper here. I think maybe in some cases it's earned that reputation.
Mm. That's good. Okay. So let me ask you this, because I have this theory about counselors and about counseling. I, you know, I have a little bit of schooling in counseling, very, very little. But my belief is that a good counselor knows how to ask the right questions to get you to go to the core of who you are. So my question for you is, have you always been a good question asker?
That's, well, I would have to answer quickly, no, because early on, starting on, I never thought I would go to college as a teenager. Mm. I went and had a bachelor's in church music. I definitely never thought I'd go get a master's degree. I mean, that was like unheard of in my family of six kids growing up. Well, I went and got a master's from Dallas Seminary, and then to go get a master's in counseling, I never thought I would do that. So to ask good questions, no, I was good at talking a lot and saying things. I became a better question asker once I moved from being the announcer. You're listening to Moody Radio, WRMB, Boynton Beach, and being a Christian DJ, which I was in radio for 35 years. But when I became an interviewer, I remember the first time I sat with an interview, I think it was with a missionary on the Moody radio station in Florida I worked at. And I thought, I have no clue. I know how to do the voice and make say who's singing the Bill Gaither Trio, which dates me. But I didn't know how to ask questions. As I began to listen and ask questions in the radio side of things, then I moved into talk radio and calling counseling talk radio. Then I began to develop the art of asking questions, good questions, I think, and wanted to be a good interviewer, which has served me well. This counseling arrangement that I'm in today is to really try to ask good questions and not be trying to just force my quote wisdom or knowledge on a person. Then as I got into counseling and learned to abide by this philosophy, follow the client, the person I'm working with, I wait, well, what's your program, Jim? Listen to you. You give me the colors and I try to help you paint with them. And then I do, you know, the best counseling course I find is in Nehemiah chapter one, when he is there. And then it moves into chapter two, and King Artaxerxes, a king who had the power to destroy him, said, hey, I see that you're sick. I mean, I see that you're sad, and I know this is not a sickness. This is only a sadness of the heart. The king, because Nehemiah was cupbearer to the king, you don't go into the king's presence sad in that biblical context, in that context. So he noticed he was sad, and he says, all right, why shouldn't I be sad? Nehemiah says, it's bad back at home. Life's falling apart, not good. The walls are broken down. The king says, well, what do you want? Well, that's the scariest question I ever ask in counseling. What do you really want? Jesus did it more. What are you thirsty for? John 5, man at the pool of Bethesda, Jesus says, you really want to be well? And then he says, well, how long will it take to go do this? What you want to do? He says, what do you need? Those are just basic questions that the Bible asks. Jesus, think of the woman at the well, right? She's there. I mean, he could have gone for the jugular with all he knew, right, in his omniscience. He could have said, look, let's just get to the point. You are not, and some biblical counselors do this. You're just living in sin and everybody knows it. He keeps drawing your heart out. She wants to talk theology. He keeps going back to her heart, thirst, longing. And finally he says, tell me about your husband. Look how artistic he was. So I think that part, I was not originally a good question asker. I got now more and more. And usually when I'm more the person, including my family, I'll say, hey, I have a thought. Lisa, are you open to a thought? It's not a technique. And you go, well, yeah, because I don't want to assume. We know the research shows nobody wants unsolicited advice. I want to say, Lisa, I have a thought. And you go, well, yeah. Then I'll say, okay, here's the question I want to ask you. Even there, I don't want to just dive in with questions. So,
okay. I knew from the beginning when I sat down with you for the first time, I knew we were kindred. I knew that I liked you. I'll be honest. I had in my mind, of what kind of counselor I wanted to meet with. Now, I didn't know if it was, I wanted a guy who was a little bit older. I don't know if it was that I was missing my father. You're not old enough to be my dad, but there is
a narrative there of your closeness to your dad.
Yeah.
That I feel I'm moved by that story, right?
Yeah.
That's just a true story.
Yeah. I wanted that. So when I met with you for the first time, your name's Jim. My dad's name was Jim. That was a coincidence, but I was drawn to you immediately. But okay, but I'm weirded out by this for just a minute, and you would have no way of knowing this. No, I'm serious.
About to find out, apparently.
You are about to find out. You know, I got really excited when I just said this. You know, we just met in the last little bit. I mean, in the last 18 months, you would not know this, but the book that I wrote in 2015 is called I Want God. No, 2012. See, I don't even remember dates, Jim, but it was like 2012. Okay. The book is called I Want God. Okay. Yeah. This book, Jim, is all about John 5. And the question, what do you want? It's in, you know, it's the John 5 narrative, but it's also John 1, where the question that Jesus asks is when it's bizarre. It's the question, what do you want? Because I was so compelled by this question. It's the one question that he asked. He could have asked any question. And it was this question, what do you want? And of course, it's what seek ye? What are you looking for? And so I'm so compelled that you just said this whole thing, would have no idea that I wrote this whole book based around this, but it really—
That's true, by the way.
Well, it really—
I did not know that.
Oh, I know you didn't, because we didn't know each other then. But here's the thing, because our wants drive us, not our needs. And so I think that's so interesting that yet again, and now I've just got to get off this whole train of thought because I'm so compelled by the fact that we are yet again kindred. Here's the thing. I think the stigma with counseling is changing a little bit. I do believe in the church. You know, here's the truth while we're on the subject of my father, you know, my father could have used counseling in the biggest way. I mean, it would have been, I think it would have set him free in so many ways, but in that time, Jim, and I think it still exists some, but not nearly like it did then. In that time, it would have been, it could have been career ending in a way, if anyone would have known that he was seeking counseling. So he was well aware of that. A lot of the men of that era were well aware of that. It was a pull yourself up by your bootstraps and
keep your cards close to the vest too.
Keep your cards close to the vest. You can't trust anyone. Hence why there are some trust issues with a lot of ministry families. And I carry some of that on into, you know, life even now. You know, there was probably some pride attached to it, but, it was a tough day. I think some of it's changing. Thankfully, you know, we all had a tough 2020, no question. 2021 hasn't been a breeze. Life's not a breeze. What do you think people need more of, hope or peace?
My first response is, I think one for me, peace will not come without hope. If in this life only we have hope, St. Paul told us we're of all people most miserable. Hope, the old, there's an old Latin American theologian, I've quoted this, and some people have attributed this to me, it's very clearly, it's not directly for me. He said, hope is the melody of the future. Faith is dancing to that melody right now. Mm-hmm. So there was Morse codes for years in history, tapped out in submarines when men were trapped in Morse code, tapped out, is there any hope? So I think hope is primary, peace is then secondary, that if I have hope and we have in Christ, obviously the hope always demands an object. People I've talked to, I'm like, you sound like you got hope in hope. Hope demands an object, and we would say more than that, a person. So the idea of has there been a hopeless situation? Now can I look, especially in Christ, that there is hope, our blessed hope, literally. And then out of that, trusting in that, I think peace flows. And I would put faith in the middle of being able to flow in accepting in faith, walking in faith, that hope one day will be realized very much. And then I think peace flows.
So good. Okay. I'm going to pull a Jim Crass on you. I'm going to pull a Jim Crass on Jim Crass.
That's scary.
Are you open to an idea? What's that thing that you said?
Yes.
Okay.
Are you open to a thought?
Are you open to a thought? Okay. Actually, it's more than a thought. I want to do something with you. My new book is called The Hard Good. It's about showing up for God to work in you when you want to shut down. I have some chapter titles, and I'd love for you to just sort of riff on this. Maybe give me, seriously, like one thought that's attached to these chapter titles that's a piece of advice or just kind of the first thing that comes to your mind. And we'll just zip through them because I can't wait to hear what you have to say about each of them. Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
All right. Accepting something you wish were something different.
Mental and spiritual health is a commitment to reality at all cost. It is not just a commitment to reality at all cost. If I accept something that I wish was different in my life or in a relationship, or yes, even with God, I love when the scripture says, let God be true and every man a liar, then the idea is to make peace with that and be able to grieve and say, there are some things that I don't like. I wish it was different in my childhood growing up. I call that naming, not blaming. Say, I wish this was different. I wish this was different currently in a relationship. I wish that God some days, that G-O-D, God, stood for God on demand. I mean, the lady at the Chick-fil-A drive-thru can be slow, not really usually, but she's a lot faster than you, God. I wish it was different than God. If I prayed it, boom. I mean, it happened. Things were different. I wish this person loved me more. And I wish I wouldn't have sinned. And for me, in the brokenness of my past, there were things I did I wish that I could go back and rewrite.
So good. Okay, how about this one? Cheering for someone when they get what you want, which, by the way, is very different than when you're in a position of power and somebody else gets something. Like, right, we don't mind that as much. But what about when someone gets what you want, and how do you, you know, cheering for them? So that's different. That's tough.
Well, A, let's have true confession time. That's something I've wrestled with throughout my life at times.
Yeah.
Thankfully, as I've gotten older in maturity and in even emotional sobriety and growing up, but there are moments and people I think confuse. I have some, until I learned better, confused envy and jealousy. Jealousy is something that is truly rightfully mine, and you're stepping on my turf, or you're in something and taking something from me. One idea of that. Envy is something that's really not mine, but I'm envious, not jealous. Envious in my mind that you're getting something that I think I could have kind of had. That could be someone coming into a financial windfall and think, well, how come they got that and I didn't? Or sometimes it could be, how come someone's a book sold bigger, or somebody got more acclaim, or somebody got this different position or this favor that I didn't get? Someone appears to succeed more, and I can go clear back to sports or me singing groups in my Bible college I went through, and I didn't make it in this particular group thinking I think I'm good enough, and they got it. And I could at times feel like I've had times even in my flesh of thinking, maybe I just hope they actually fail and don't succeed. I would want people to cheer for me. I would want them to cheer me on if I got it. And that moment, it always flips. And I go, if people say, hey, Jim, we're glad you got that. That was good. You got this opportunity. I would want people to cheer for me. And then it sobers me up. And I go, Lord, I want to be that person that when others have success appropriately, I want to be like Hebrews 12, all those are cheering people on, those who've gone before. I want to be in that earthly crowd that says, you go, Lisa. Seriously, you write a book, may it sell a million copies.
Yeah,
I want to cheer you on. Yeah. It's a mind shift for me.
Yep. Totally get it. All right. Showing up when you want to shut down.
Well, a buddy of mine, we lead these workshops, Lisa, and we talk about showing up in the show up place.
Yeah.
And when that goes on, there's a sense, it's Brene Brown's an author, and she talks about showing up in the arena. So sometimes it's as simple for me and maybe others as, if I'm honest, you ought to be in the counseling field. You know, in honesty, there are days I don't want to come in here.
Yeah.
I don't want to come in and counsel. Days I may not want to go to church. Days I may not want to show up for my spouse. I mean, I just kind of just leave me alone, or I'd like to watch Netflix. So the idea of saying, there's a part of me, and maybe for good reason, maybe I'm lacking self-care, margin in my life, good white space that I can be there to just do. I'm like the boundaries are closing in. I'm feeling life claustrophobia or relational claustrophobia. And how do I get up and say, I want to suit up and show up here? Usually I find it. I find most people will find too, that when they do show up in that arena, whatever that arena is, they're glad they did. But often if I wait in the moment, it's like, I just don't feel like doing it right now. And I have to push through that.
That's so true. Goodness gracious. All right. Two more. I want to ask you all of these because I'm like, oh, I'd love to hear what he has to say about all the chapter titles. But let's just do two more. Opening up your heart again when it's been hurt.
Well, trust is rebuilt over two roads. See, one road over top of the other. Trust is rebuilt over time plus provable, reliable experience. Male or female, in my experience, especially as adults and probably as children, we're wired if someone betrays us, self-protectively to shut down and say, I am not going to just give you my trust. That's the old line, I think, of people earning that trust back. But so when there's been any level of betrayal or someone feel like you have broken trust with me or you've just not shown up for me, I think that's a sense to make a choice. As Ronald Reagan said to Gorbachev back in the day, He spoke the Russian proverb, which is dovarai no provarai, and it means trust but verify. Mm-hmm. And I think when trust has been broken, there's a place to say, give myself grace and say, I shouldn't trust. Jesus, remember, there were people that he said, I'm not going to trust myself to. He says, I will entrust myself to the one who judges justly. So there's a place rationally, spiritually, biblically even to go, I don't, that would not be healthy for me to try to trust this person. And yet I might give them another chance and see if trust can be restored.
Yeah. And it may not be the same person. You know, something I talk about a lot in the chapter is when you live with a closed heart in general, you know, after you've been hurt by XYZ and you're just walking around with just closed, you know, closed off, and you find yourself closed off from everything. It's a hard way to live, Jim, because I can tell you, you know, I've lived that way for a long time. You know, there are many, and sometimes I will find myself, oh, I'm closing up again, or, you know, oh, I'm finding myself living open. And I do think it has a lot to do with my own trust in Jesus and my own belief system that I can have discernment and handle what is coming my way, you know, regardless of who it is too. But I think it takes all those things, don't you? Like, you know, the wisdom, the specific situation with whatever person, because there are some people we don't need to revisit.
That's right, I think.
Yeah.
I think too, real quickly, is if you put it on to God, sometimes we're putting masks onto God, which there's a line in The Shack where some people don't like that movie, but it's a great line, at least in the movie, when Papa in that movie turns to Mac and says, I'm not who you think I am. Often we're just viewing God as a heavenly version of our earthly father or mother and projecting or transferring stuff. It's like, we just try at least to give God his face and say, oh, you're not my dad. You're not this person who hurt me. Because God's the ultimate person to abandon ourselves to and trust.
Yeah, so true. Okay, last one. Welcoming change, hard and good, right?
It is. And in the idea, as even just developmentally, as we get older, the very seasons of life, things will change. And then you have, well, I'm no longer single, now I'm married, for those that are married. Single people go through their own passages, so to speak. And then I have kids, and then they're growing up in those. And then maybe there is certainly one day jumping all the way ahead to the empty nest that we're kind of facing with our three children. And so when change comes in, or sometimes just dynamically, and just again, a marriage, the passages or stages we're in, we actually change and say, well, where we used to connect at this level, it seems systemic at some level. I used to operate on a PC kind of mentality, and therapy does this, discipleship does this often. I'm now more of a Mac. I'm literally changing in how I view a lot of things. So, and then I love your word there in your chapter title, to welcome change versus, okay, here it is. I guess I'll go along like Eeyore the donkey or something, but I welcome it. You're here. Right. And think about where we live, at least you and I in the Charlotte area of North Carolina, the seasons literally change. We welcome it. Hopefully not just springtime, but how do we say, how do I make peace with welcoming fall and barren trees and then winter? How do we even welcome the change of COVID-19?
Yes.
All of us had a face full of that one.
It's so hard. I mean, you know, I'm thinking about like my son getting married, Jim, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I remember when one of my girlfriends called me when her son was about to get married, and she said, you know, she was in tears and she said, I don't know if I can do this. It was her only son. It was her only child. And she said, you know, how do I do this? How do I, and of course I hadn't been through it before. So I was great at giving advice. I was like, well, here's what you're going to do. You're going to be a boss. You're going to be the mom that you always have been. And he's not even going to know how great that you're momming him, even out there by just being, you know, not about you and being fun and being great and not making it about you and being in a ball of tears and all these things. You know, it's great when you give advice when you haven't been through it. Now I'm facing it myself, but I'm kind of giving myself my same advice. Like, you know, I want to offer him, even though he's not mine to offer. I mean, let's be honest, you know, but it is kind of this mindset, like as a mom, to go, before I look at it as he's being taken away from me, I have to look at it for my own sanity in a way, as I am giving this moment to him as a gift. As a mom who says, I'm not going to make this about me, where I'm in a ball of tears on the dance floor. Mm. And listen, no disrespect to any mom who balls on the dance floor. And I'm not there yet. So I might, But I've even told him, like, let's do a fun dance, because I don't want to be in a ball of tears, because I want this to be about you. I want this to be fun. And I know myself, I'm so tender with my kids that that it is my way, Jim, of welcoming change, you know,
yes,
in a weird way. So
anyway, and notice how strategic, it's weird, as you said, yeah, Lisa, that's your yeah word, but how strategic and well thought through and proactive. If I'm proactive, it can often help me from being reactive just by right being proactive.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, I'll probably be in your office after this event. But anyway.
You actually are already via Zoom. So
that's
nice
true.
To see
but, yeah. But I mean, for a fee, we'll put it that way. Let me just ask you a couple more things and then we've got to bring it to a close. Where do you find most people get blocked when it comes to their faith?
Well, for me, I can tell you, for me, that I can say whatever global thought I have about that. For me, is I have found my faith journey becoming more difficult as I have gotten older, and yet it's sometimes not getting, it's gotten almost easier. Here's the thing. I don't remember one faith struggle, like, at all, till I looked at my mother's face in a casket. I have tried, I've done 20 years of therapy as me as the client, until I went, I hope I'll see her again. That's what I thought. I thought, I hope I'll see her again. That was the crack in the egg for me. So going through that, I think the idea of, again, mental and spiritual health is a commitment to reality at all costs, as I said earlier. So therefore, in my faith is just Hebrews 11, you know, the substance of things, hope for the evidence of things not seen, to go through that. And I think this is my opinion, but it's experience too, is the refusal to embrace doubt. The idea that doubt for me is the passageway moving into and through the doubt, not demanding all the questions answered by God, my faith increases. And as I get older and older, I'm 58 now, I don't even feel 58. I don't know what that means, but there's a sense of saying I'm no longer afraid of doubt. I talk with doubt. I might journal and dialogue with doubt instead of running from it.
So good. I talk in The Hard Good about sitting with God through the uncomfortable process, because, you know, it dawned on me, and I wrote about this in Joe, and this is from my own life. You know, what would happen, Lisa, if you would sit with God through the uncomfortable process instead of every time he's starting to do a work and you running away? And this has historically been the rub of my life, Jim. It's like, you know, and it was honestly the rub of my father's life. It's like every time God would begin to do a work in him at a church or something, it'd be like, oh, God's calling us away. We got to move, you know? And we all just kind of nodded, went along. I put the Miss Piggy poster up in my new room at the new parsonage. And we all just kind of, my mom cooked in the new kitchen, and we all just kind of went along with it. God called us away. We got to do it, you know? And the reality was, is there was an uncomfortable process there that I think God really wanted to take my father through, but it was hard. And so instead of sitting in the hard to allow God to make it good and profoundly change my dad in many ways for greater usability, it was just a pack up and move. What are your thoughts on that, about sitting with God through the uncomfortable process and how that can change us?
Have a clear thought, and just inspired by you as you just said that, is I want to be focused more on the process than the progress of moving forward and on to the next thing. Here's Babylonian captivity. God says, I'm not hiding it. Jeremiah, the false prophets were there saying, hey, wait a minute, you're not supposed to go through this. God through Jeremiah says, no, you're going to be there 70 years. No, it's not home. But in the process of these 70 years, get married, raise kids, build houses, plant gardens. He said, live. We know that earth is not our final home. So being more focused on the process, God, what am I doing here in the process than the progress somehow moving forward? Like, I always ask the question, think about not what is God teaching you? What's the lesson? That's fine if you want that. But what is God doing in me? Because God never wastes a wound. He never wastes a disappointment. He, as a C.S. Lewis would say in Narnia, wanting to take me further up and further in. Focus on the process you are in right now than the progress of moving on down the line.
So good. Okay, we're going to do this. This is like one-liners. Give me the first thing that comes to the top of your mind. Someone you are like, they're wise. I would go to them for counseling. So who's that for you? Or you may have already gone to them for counseling, but somebody that you consider really wise that you think is a great counselor.
Well, At the point of this interview would be the man who's impacted me the most is Dr. Larry Crabb, who at the point of this interview is dying, literally on death's door. And I have a friend who used to lead the program that I still work at called On-Site Workshops. Yeah. His name is Bill Loki. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say my precious, godly, incredibly wise wife, Jessica. No question.
I had a feeling Jessica would come up, and that's fantastic. Yeah. I love it. Thing that you've loved about being a dad.
Boy, my brain would, as soon as you said that, if dad was good and I messed up so much as a parent, as a dad, but boy, God's redemption and let me be a granddaddy. Mm. But what I love being, you know, I'll tell you, one of the biggest ones for me, my wife homeschooled our kids, was just having them nearby and the presence of being there and to have fun and relationships with them, not just teaching them the things of God, but just the relational, being there and having a relationship.
Yeah. So good. Go to date night activity. What do you and Jessica like to do?
Cracker Barrel.
Are you serious?
I'm boring you to death. My wife and I, we're so simple at one level. And the idea of to go out and have, we just, you know, you're a foodie at the Cracker Barrel level. We are very much. So the idea of just going out and then having rich conversation over dinner to do that. Now, in different times, when we're coming out of this pandemic, is to go to a movie. That's just not like a getaway weekend, but yeah, to go to a movie, but a dinner and a movie would be a real blast for us.
No, I relate to it. I'm not a snob about it. Scotty and I would probably go to Waffle House over Cracker Barrel, but yeah. Look, anything that I don't have to dress up for, I'm into yeah. it. Yeah. We've been married almost 26 years and you guys have been married longer than that. So, you know, you don't have to go to all the cool places mm-hmm. anymore. It's awesome. Thing you've learned about people in counseling all these years. What's a people thing you've learned?
Number one thing that I've learned, it came out of my mouth in a counseling session probably 2 decades ago. I thought I had the power to really change people. No couple I was with was going to get divorced. First couple that got divorced, I remember out of my mouth, and I've used it ever since, came these words. In the end, I went, people pretty much do what they want to do. That seems so simple, but you can do all this and you write your books and teach people and women. But in the end, look at the Bible. And I've learned, yeah. I thought, look at God's people, all they wanted to do. And they proclaim things and all that. It's like, in the end, we're going to pretty much do about what we want to do.
Yeah. Gosh, so true. All right, friend, this is my last question. I ask it of every single guest. What is the last thing you'd say about Jesus if you could only say one more thing?
Oh, I want to do two. One, he is faithful and true, but I'll go to Philippians 1:6, that he, Lord Jesus Christ, who began a good work in old Jim Crest, messy old Jim, will continue to work in me and perfect that until he calls me home to heaven. He will never give up on me, and he will just not give up. He's mm-hmm. working an old Jimbo. He will not quit working on me. May I let him continue to do his work.
You've almost brought me to tears because Jimbo is what my dad used to be called. Anyway, thank you so much for being on this show. You are a dear friend. You're a gift to the body of Christ, and I'm just grateful that I get to have you personally in my life, which I know everyone's jealous of, but thank you for being on the show.
Lisa, pleasure's all mine. I really appreciate you a lot.
You've been listening to Jesus Over Everything with Lisa Whittle. Have you heard about my best-selling book and 6-week session Bible study, Jesus Over Everything? Head over to lisawhittle.com/Joe right now to find out more.